Hello, I'm Norman Swan. Welcome to this week's Health Report. Today, the 50th anniversary of an important Australian discovery, and without which we'd have very little understanding of how our immune system works, including how we reject transplants and fight viral infections. And now 50 years on, the same researcher is making important discoveries in insulin-dependent diabetes. Also later, the Minister for Health answers some critical comments on the Health Report a couple of weeks ago, and an outrageous situation affecting mothers who've lost their baby. Joel Werner has the story.
I've been on the pill for many years, and we decided that we'd try and give it a go. Sometimes it takes women ages. And so we ceased taking the pill, and I was pregnant first cycle, which came as a shock to everyone. Found out just before Christmas last year that we were expecting a baby, which is fantastic.
That's Helen Campbell from Milperra, a suburb in Sydney's west. Like most young mothers, Helen was excited to be pregnant for the first time. But in April this year, about 4 months into her pregnancy, Helen noticed that something was wrong.
On the Thursday night, he was just going crazy kicking. The next day, there wasn't much on the Friday, and then on the Saturday, there was nothing. And then on the Saturday night, I said to my boyfriend, there's nothing going on, by tomorrow morning we'll have to go to the hospital. And so off we went on the Sunday morning to Westmead. They did 3 ultrasounds, and then they discovered there was no heartbeat. So on Monday, I had to go back, get the couple of tablets to soften the cervix to bring on the induction, and then on Wednesday morning went in and had the baby on Wednesday night.
It must have been a terribly emotional time for you.
Yeah, it was. The hardest thing at that time, the few days between the Sunday and the Wednesday, was knowing that he was inside me but he wasn't alive. That was really hard. Anyway, well, there's nothing you can do about it, really.
A stillbirth is the delivery of a baby who shows no signs of life, that is of a registrable age, which in Australia is post 20 weeks gestation, if that is known, and it usually is, or over 400 grams. There's also a little bit of difficulty because sometimes now with modern technology we know the baby has died before 20 weeks but is not delivered till well after 20 weeks, and strictly speaking, legally, that's still a stillbirth.
So in Australia, how common are stillbirths?
Stillbirths are around about 7 for every 1,000 deliveries, and is higher in certain groups such as the Aboriginal group. But the statistic is interesting because it really has shown very little change over the last 20 years or so, and that's true not only in Australia but also from the UK data and from North American data.
Dr. Adrian Charles is a paediatric and perinatal pathologist based at the Princess Margaret and King Edward Memorial Hospitals in Perth. As he mentioned, the rate of stillbirths has remained largely unchanged for near on 2 decades. One explanation for this is that we don't yet know enough about what causes stillbirth. Dr. Susan Arbuckle is the head of histopathology at Westmead Children's Hospital in Sydney.
Data for the stillbirths is still very inadequate, and you really need a thorough investigation of stillbirth to find the causes and therefore be able to do something about the causes. And this includes really good placental histopathology for all stillbirths and the parents being given the option of a very high quality autopsy, and that depends on it being done by experts. Without that, I don't think you're going to get the answers to a lot of stillbirth problems. The feeling is that many unexplained stillbirths really are unexplored stillbirths.
The nurses and the staff were absolutely fantastic. Can't thank them enough. They asked us if we wanted to get an autopsy done. We said yes, and that was done that day. So, and then they said it would take about 3 months to get the results, so we were happy with that.
When it comes to investigating stillbirth, autopsy is the gold standard. Adrian Charles.
There have been various studies which show that in about 40% of the time, the autopsy provides an important clue as to what the cause of death is. It's also an important negative. Congenital abnormalities are quite high, and although we have very good antenatal screening, still we do find congenital abnormalities appearing that weren't previously detected. Even in those cases where the autopsy doesn't find anything, it often excludes certain key things. So it excludes a congenital abnormality, it excludes that the baby's well grown or not. One study that I was involved in where we use different classification systems, and we had things like the maternal history, the autopsy, post-mortem examination report, the placenta report, and other investigations which may have been done on the mother at the time to see whether the baby bled into her, whether any other markers of infection, and so on. And the autopsy, together with the placenta, which really are best considered as one examination, was the most useful finding in determining what the cause of death was in those various scenarios. It was the most important thing above clinical history, above other tests done on the mother in the majority of cases. There will be cases where a blood test on the mother gives the cause of death more than the autopsy, but by and large, the autopsy and placenta together do provide a very useful clue in a good percentage of the cases.
Autopsies are the most valuable investigative tool when it comes to learning more about stillbirth. But for parents who have just lost a child, consenting to an autopsy isn't a decision to be taken lightly, and nor should it be.
One of my mentors had the phrase that he thought it was every parent's right to be offered the autopsy to understand why their baby had died, and equally it was their right to decline that if they so wished, but they need to be helped through that process.
So you'd think that when parents are generous enough to consent to an autopsy, that every effort would be made to ensure the process is efficient and it provides best quality outcomes. For Helen Campbell, this has not been the case.
Well, 3 months has passed. I phoned up at that time to speak to the nurses at the Women's Health Clinic at Westmead to see what results were there and to arrange making an appointment to come in and get them. The nurse I spoke to, which was the team leader, said, quite frankly, "Oh, the results take 12 months now, didn't they tell you?" The answer was no, they didn't tell me. I was in a state of shock, I think.
Absolutely.
So this could drag on for another 12 months or so.
Did they give you any reason why it takes 12
months? No. And I think I was too shocked to ask. I was, oh, okay.
That isn't ideal, and I don't think it's optimal for the parents, and the guidelines are that it should be a shorter turnaround.
The way it should be done is within 2 to 3 days they should get a preliminary report so that the clinicians can give them a preliminary report on exactly what was found at the autopsy. Ideally, you should get back your report within a 3 to 4 month period as to exactly what has happened.
Due to shortages and resources in some states, there unfortunately can be long delays. The guidelines are ideally within a couple of months or so, because by that time the parents are often coming back for follow-up clinics and they're starting to ask questions about why, will it happen again, and so on. There will be some exceptions to that. Some tests, if one is suspecting a metabolic disorder, may need to be sent elsewhere around the world, and some of those highly complex tests may take longer. Sometimes the genetics may take longer, but pretty well, one's always got a pretty good handle on what the cause of death is.
Helen Campbell never received a preliminary report and now has to wait until April 2012 to find out why her son died. Why the delay? As Adrian Charles mentioned, there are resource shortages in some states in Australia. Some states, but not others. Susan Arbuckle.
Western Australia, South Australia, and to some extent Victoria have been set up with expert perinatal services which service the state. And that's easily done in Western Australia and South Australia, which are much smaller states, and they actually divide the Northern Territory between them. In Victoria, they have more than one centre, but the majority go to the women's hospital. In New South Wales, that hasn't been the case. It's been done wherever it has been possible, and it hasn't been set up as expert centres. Having said that, the obstetricians want their autopsies done by experts because they want an answer, and they want to be able to counsel the women appropriately, make arrangements for the next pregnancy that will give a better outcome, and be able to have some assurance about what they're doing is the right thing. There are areas where there have been perinatal pathologists dedicated to that, and a lot of the obstetricians have decided to send their babies to those areas rather than have them done in other places.
What's the problem in states like New South Wales? Is it a depth of resource issue?
Partially it's a depth of resource issue, and it's also a problem of funding. It's expensive to do autopsies, and if you have an expert centre, it's not just the expert perinatal pathologist you need. You need a radiology department who's going to be able to report back on the x-rays, which we do on every single baby. You need a geneticist at hand who can come and give you advice on those babies with genetic abnormalities and whom you can refer to. And I think New South Wales needs more than one centre because it's such a large state with such a large population. And at the moment, with the Department of Health, we're in the middle of forming a committee to look at perinatal autopsies and the best way to deliver the service for the state. I think as a parent, my assumption would be if I make the huge decision to allow an autopsy on my child, that it would be done by an expert and that I can expect to get back some answers to why my child died.
We've resigned to the fact that the autopsy is probably not going to give us much closure. So we're just moving on. It was just, I don't know, a failed attempt to get answers and a reason why, which is what all women want when these things happen, but I don't think we're going to get one.
I feel it's very important that a parent who loses a baby, which is an absolute catastrophe for every individual parent, and they want another baby, that they need a service where they're going to be able to be assured to get the best answer possible, an idea of what happened in this pregnancy, an idea of what can be done for the next pregnancy, and that's what the obstetricians want as well. And I'm quite passionate about the fact that it should be done by experts who will be able to deliver this service.
That's if states like New South Wales can get their act together. Mind you, it comes on top of last week's story on the Health Report, where every state is refusing to screen for a potentially fatal but treatable disorder of newborns. It makes you wonder where health ministers' priorities lie if they're not with mothers and children. Joel Werner had that story. I'm Norman Swan, and this is the Health Report here on ABC Radio National.